Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs, who's going to be ordained this weekend by the Episcopal Church as the Bishop of the Diocese of Indianapolis, which covers 48 congregations in the lower two-thirds of Indiana. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here. And before we get into the conversation, I probably should do my bit since this is Pledge Week and remind our listeners that they should make their pledge to WFYI, as my wife and I have done. And if you want to do that, you can do so by going online at WFYI.org/give. That's WFYI.org/give. Or you can call 1-800-233-0020. The operators are standing by. And I guess I should also start by saying thank you, Bishop-elect Baskerville Burroughs, because you've already made your pledge and your gift.
I have. I've been supporting public radio since just after college, and moving here, I would have, you know, the first thing I'd want to do is support FYI. It's a delight.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that a great deal. So I want to start first. This is a big moment on Saturday. And first, I'd like you to talk about the significance of the moment for you and then the significance of the moment for the church.
I have to say, I spent a lot of time in reflection and prayer about just what is going to be happening. And I'm not sure I've got my arms around it fully. You know, it's a really big deal to have been called into an office that has great responsibility for the care of so many people. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of my life which has led me to this moment. So I feel that it's the right space to be stepping into. And yet it's something I could not have imagined a decade ago. And so I'm really excited about it and a little nervous. Mm-hmm. But know that there are folks who are eager to work with me, and there are great Episcopalians and people of all faiths and none here that I look forward to working with over the next, I don't know, decade and a half or so.
So you say this is not something you could have. Was this something that you sort of planned to do ever? I mean, was it an aspirational goal of any kind? I know people get a little weird thinking that, you know, people who have been called to faith somehow also have to renounce ambition, but there can be an ambition to serve too.
Yeah, no, that's actually a big thing, particularly around the office of bishop. And because in the Episcopal Church we elect our bishops, there's just a lot of stuff around that, around the ambition question. And so I will say that I've had folks plant the seeds about this office over time, people saying, you know, you might make a great bishop one day. You should think about that. And I've shrugged it off for a very long time because I thought, I'm not ready. I'm not sure if it's my call. And there was something about the call to this particular place in Indianapolis, in the Diocese of Indianapolis, this part of the state, that was so right all along the way that, you know, everything kind of clicked, and so here we are.
What convinced you when you said, I'm not sure I'm ready? What convinced you at this moment now that you are ready? And you said also that it was Indianapolis. What specifically?
Well, there's something about the Diocese of Indianapolis, this, you know, central and southern Indiana and the Episcopal Church here that has been about a lot of the same things I've been about, which is people of faith trying to make a difference in their communities in really big and important ways, and being very active on social justice issues on the one hand, but also in just calling people into a particular broad welcome kind of community. And that was immediately attractive to me when I began to look at their profile, which is the documents they put out to help describe who they are.
So we've talked a little bit about the significance for you. What's the significance? And I realize you probably get tired of answering this question, but being the first female African-American and, you know, at some level reduced to a demographic rather than considered as a full person and all of that. But there is significance there because not all that long ago in this country's history, in the church's history, in the world's history, those were considered insurmountable obstacles.
Yeah, no, it's a really big deal. I'm getting emails and notes from people who are coming from across the world to be here on Saturday because they know me, and some folks don't know me, but they recognize the significance of the moment. There are only three black women, when I will be ordained, three of us in the House of Bishops. And the last one was ordained as a suffragan, which is an assisting bishop. This is Gail Harris in Massachusetts, was ordained 13 years ago. And so we elect and ordain white men. And last year we elected two white women, which is a huge number to elect three women in 1 year. These happen so infrequently, you know, we have to sort of take notice and wonder about, well, why are we not actually able to have at the top levels of leadership the kind of diversity that we have in our pews? And because that's been so slow to change and the hunger for diversity has been so deep, you know, this leads us to a fairly large moment in the life of the church and the history of the church.
And you say here that, you know, that three women were ordained last year, and that's a huge number. Probably some people out there are listening, well, wait a second. You know, 52% of the population is female. That's a long way from being proportionate.
That's right. and that's the thing. And so, you know, it's kind of hard to be happy about what might seem to be so small a number, except that, you know, the church has been an institution that's been around for thousands of years, and change sometimes comes really slow, even for a denomination that's been ordaining women for as long as the Episcopal Church has. It still takes a while for folks to look at a person and their experience and to say, oh, yes, I trust this person in this leadership role, and or I want that person to come and serve in this way.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs, who will be ordained this weekend by the Episcopal Church as the Bishop of the Diocese of Indianapolis. She is the first African-American female bishop to be ordained in North America. Do you feel a certain burden, you know, as you know, I mean, normally, you know, these trailblazers are either they have to carry the standard for gender or race. You in some ways have to carry it for both. Is that a burden of leadership or service for you?
It is, but it isn't new. You know, part of my role in the church is being a head pastor of a congregation. The leadership roles I've held in the life of the church, that's always been there. And I think a lot of professional black men and women would echo that this kind of just comes with. I am moving into a much more visible role, and that's the difference for me. The fact that a lot of my anonymity goes away, and so I'm aware that there are more eyes watching, and I'm concerned that I do well because it's a faithful thing to do. I want to serve well the people of this diocese first and foremost, but I also want to be a good example for those who might be looking and saying, oh, I think I might want to do that one day, and there's a black woman who looks, you know, who kind of looks like me, and it seems more possible. So, you know, I've had lots of young women, black girls, come up to me who I've not met saying, oh, can I take your picture because I can't believe this is happening. So I look forward to the day when I'm not the only one.
We're talking with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs here on No Limits about faith and history. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. What is it about assuming this new set of responsibilities that makes you the most nervous?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, in the Episcopal Church, the role of a bishop is part administrative. You know, there's some office work, but the major part of it is being called to be the chief pastor, teacher, the person to inspire the ordained and lay alike, and that's a huge responsibility. I mean, having the care of souls is something that, you know, puts me on my knees in prayer on a daily basis. And so knowing that there are some nearly 10,000 souls in my immediate care, that's something that's quite significant for me. And so I think, you know, I don't know what that will look like, but
What is it that you find the most appealing?
The care of almost 10,000 souls of people.
So it's almost Greek. The greatest danger is also the greatest opportunity, or the greatest weakness is also the greatest strength.
Absolutely. Because as I've been meeting folks around the diocese, I've been traveling around a lot to the furthest reaches of the diocese, Evansville, Vincennes, Washington, Columbus. I'm meeting incredible people. And so, you know, I know these are not anonymous people to me. They're people I know and care for.
We've gotten an email from our regular listener, Jerry. And if you want to join the conversation by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jerry writes, "As a devout secular humanist, I do not believe Jesus of Nazareth was a deity, that he was born to a virgin, or that he was resurrected from death. However, I respect, admire, and even love a lot of his teachings. Can we work effectively together for the betterment of humankind?"
I hope so. Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I dare say there may be people who have those same beliefs in our pews. Mm-hmm. Because we're on a wide range of spectrum of belief and assent to tenets of the faith. And so for those who are people of faith and none, we're all in this community together to try to make it better. So we will link arms with all folks who want to be about that mission of improving our world.
His issue, and I, you probably know enough coming here from Indiana, we have been split over some very divisive social issues that also have split the faith community here in the city and the state. So that question of can we link arms, can we work across divides, is one that that has particular pertinence here. How do we go about reaching across that divide?
You know, I think I found when I am at odds with someone over a difference of political belief or religious belief or whatever it is, I try to take the stance of wanting to just learn more about the person and what they think and who they are. You know, we don't, in this really fast-paced world, don't take the time, actually, to get to know each other beyond the sound bites. And, you know, and it's, that's something that I crave. And I think people at base want to do that to understand more fully. Because I believe we don't have to agree on everything. We can't. But certainly, if we talk long enough, sit together long enough, we can find things that we have in common and things that we can work on together.
We've gotten a question via Facebook. And again, if you want to join us via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Matthew writes, "I'm curious to know how the bishop-elect feels her work as the director of networking in the Diocese of Chicago prepared her for the challenges and opportunities of the coming decade. As a member of St. Paul's Episcopal Church, I'm excited about her ministry."
Wow, that's a great question. Thank you for that. And in my role as the director of networking in Chicago, I supported the bishop and the diocese in basically connecting people across some great distances. The Diocese of Chicago has a city name like Indianapolis, but it actually reached about 2/3 of the state of Illinois. And so it's about kind of like a mission of FYI. I was just joking about that. Inspiring community by sharing stories and connecting people. And that's what we did. We told stories about what folks were doing all across the region to make the world a better place, how they were living out their faith in real time. And I tried to convene and put people in rooms together where they had things in common. And so they're some simple things, but they're hard to do, again, in our fast-paced world. And I think as I anticipate stepping into the role here, I want to encourage more of that getting together around affinity and interest, telling our stories so that we in the Episcopal Church, but those who are not members of the Episcopal Church, know what we're doing and can say, hey, that's a great idea. Let me come alongside and lend what I know to help transform our communities to make them better.
How do you foster that kind of conversation, though, on such a large scale?
You know, the media can be helpful in that. And so
we're doing our part right now.
Well, yeah. And just, you know, we were active on social media, the web, using the technology to at its best to connect people. And so, you know, there are things that a lot of folks do, but the church hasn't always used to great effect, I think, to really tell the story and connect, bring people together.
We are talking with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs on No Limits today. She's going to be ordained this weekend by the Episcopal Church as the Bishop of the Diocese of Indianapolis, which covers 48 congregations in the lower two-thirds of Indiana. She's the first African-American female bishop to be ordained in North America, and only the third in the entire global Anglican community. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs, who's going to be ordained this Saturday by the Episcopal Church as the Bishop of the Diocese of Indianapolis, which covers 48 congregations in the lower two-thirds of Indiana. She is the first African-American female bishop to be ordained in North America. Only the third in the entire world is part of the Anglican Church. So I want to talk a little bit, because when I was looking you up, your life has an interesting trajectory. You did not, it appears, set out to be a bishop or a clergy member or anything like this. At one point, it looked like you were on an entirely different life path altogether and career path. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Gone to Smith College and was doing architecture and thought that that was going to be my path, although, truth be told, I didn't have the design chops for it. And so I began to think about other ways to help the built environment, so historic preservation. Anyway, I graduated, was baptized in the Episcopal Church after high school, after college, and began to embark on my preservation career, and was also active in my local church, Trinity Church in New York City, and was just doing that. And one of the priests there tapped me on the shoulder and said, have you ever thought about becoming a priest? And it kind of knocked me down, because I was really clear about where I was going. And so this God tapping me on my shoulder about something else was not in the plan. And I remember I worked up by Columbia University at that point, and I remember walking back from lunch and God saying as clear as day, I mean, I could hear it, you know, you don't have to choose. And so this notion that I could actually think about just what we call discernment about becoming a priest, as well as doing architecture or preservation, and not having to give up one for the other. And so I remembered I had a professor at Smith who taught art history, and it turned out he was a priest, and I never knew it. Mm-hmm. And he introduced me to some folks who were doing, out of the American Institute of Architecture, religion and the arts and architecture. And it helped me to kind of put those together, and I began to discern the priesthood, to prepare, you know, work with folks to think about whether this is really a call, while I pursued a graduate degree in historic preservation with the notion that there are a lot of old buildings in the Episcopal Church and I would never be out of work.
What faith tradition were you raised in?
None. I mean, we're culturally Christian, you know. Yeah. I learned the Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep prayer, and there were my grandfather, my mom's mom, a father, lived with us for a short period of time, and there were little Bibles, Gideon Bibles, that were around. But we didn't go to church except for occasionally. Mm-hmm. Growing up, but I wanted to, and so I was a seeker for a very long time.
What was it about this particular church, this faith tradition, that spoke to you so powerfully?
You know, I had a real, you know, what we would call a conversion experience when I was in high school, mm-hmm. when I was seeking, and I found the Episcopal Church by a kind of a, you know, serendipitous thing where my Jewish, Orthodox Jewish English professor had us read a play called Life with Father, which is about an Episcopal family. Mm-hmm. In the movie, I think Elizabeth Taylor played one of the roles. She was 16. It's one of her first parts. Anyway, I love this play, and I love the words in it, Episcopal, catechism, confirmation. So I was on a leadership trip in Washington, D.C., and they said, you could go to church on a Sunday, pick one, Methodist, Episcopal. And I said, Episcopal, I like the word. And I found myself at St. John's Church on Lafayette Square across from the White House. And it was one of the most amazing things I'd ever experienced. I mean, I wanted to go to church at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And, the music was beautiful. There was something about the pageantry, because liturgy, the worship style, that was just so, it drew me in so much. And I heard God say, you're home. Like, this is it. So when I got to Smith College the next year, I stepped on campus. There was a church in the middle of campus, Episcopal Church, St. John's. And the rest is history, as they say.
When you say that you heard God's voice speak, how was that communicated to you when you said he told you, or she told you,
thank you,
you're home, you're home?
It was just, I don't know. I mean, I can remember it really vividly as being this relaxation into being in the space and the words, you're home. I mean, and it wasn't I'm home.
Mm-hmm.
It was your home. And I clung to that.
Yeah. So it was more a feeling that settled over. Well, I'm curious about this. And I know there is a tendency on both sides of the divide to kind of disparage these kinds of conversations. But at least in those moments when I have felt my own life being divinely shaped or guided, I haven't heard a voice that is more like that, a feeling that you are on the right path, that there's this sense of release and reassurance at that moment. Was that what it...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a part of it.
Incredibly intimate stuff about. So I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I've told the story, so it's nothing that I haven't said. But the part I don't talk about often is that, how do we describe the sort of supernatural, the things that are intangible, the notion of the divine and how that operates? It's really hard to put words around that. But I will say that though I did not go to church, the feeling that there was a divine presence in my life was consistent. And I talked to God all the time as a child. So when I found myself in that sanctuary at St. John's Lafayette Square, it wasn't a brand new conversation.
We are talking with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs. The B's get me a little confused there. I want to make sure I get them in the right order.
You're not alone.
About her upcoming ordination and her faith journey to this point in her life and career. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named John has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. John, welcome to the program.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
My name's John. I'm a Cradle Episcopalian, and just curious. First, congratulations on your coming consecration this Saturday. And I was curious if you could say something about your vision for the diocese in terms of discernment for holy orders for candidates.
Thanks very much.
Intend to foster that.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, John.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thank you for your good wishes. So, John, you may know that in the Episcopal Church we have what's called the Commission on Ministry, which is a group of people, lay and ordained, who help in the discernment of all kinds of vocations, and ordained ministry is one of them. And so my vision, which is, it's new. I'm sort of coming into what that is as I learn this diocese. But my vision for ordained ministry in general has been to be one who really listens intently with people for how what we would call the Holy Spirit is moving in their lives to call them into a new way of living out their faith. And for the ordained ministry, I think that discernment is one of the most important things that I would be called to do with people. It's something that we all can do. We all have a role, whether we're lay or ordained, in that work as we work in community to help shape someone's vocational life. And so my vision mostly is just to be able to listen intently to what the diocese needs, what the needs are for the church now, and to hear those who might be looking to give their gifts in that way and to see how those come together. I will say that it's not really getting to the vision question. I do want to encourage people, though, to consider the ordained ministry because it's an incredible life. And I would hope that we're able to call into ministry folks from a variety of backgrounds to serve here in the diocese and for the rest of the world.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Valeria. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And if you want to join the conversation via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Valeria writes, how can members of the diocese best help you as you move into this new calling? I sincerely welcome you and your family. Says she's a member of St. Philip's Indy.
I was going to say, I think I know Valeria. I remember that name. Okay. And so St. Philip's was the first church my family and I visited when we arrived in Indiana. And so really great folks doing ministry there. And I would say, just like with anyone else, one of the things if I'm going to have any concerns about this office, is that it can be a little isolating. You know, it's not that it's the lonely at the top kind of thing, but, you know, it's a little bit about that. And so one of the most important things I think I would hope that we can do for each other is to always be in conversation, to tell the truth to one another, and to help me tell the story of the good stuff we're doing here, and to be always abundantly hospitable and welcoming.
Gotten another email from a listener named Paul. Paul writes, how is the Diocese of Indianapolis doing? We always hear that the mainline denominations are shrinking. Is this diocese, is the group growing or shrinking? Are its demographics changing in terms of generation and other forms of diversity? Is it drawing in new members or bringing back old members? That's actually several questions. I misled you.
Well, yeah, because I was going to say yes, 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 and yes, and all of the above. But, you know, the numbers thing is a hard thing to get our, you know, to get our arms around. And we can spend a lot of time talking about that. I would say there's no question that across the board, the mainline church has been losing membership, and how you count them and what percentages you use. I mean, they vary. And so the question I'm really concerned with is how do we nurture and inspire the folks who are currently with us, and how do we do what Jesus asked us to do, which is to go out and to bring others into the fold, so to speak. So that's I see vibrancy in a lot of our congregations. I see struggle in some of them, and it's the same that I see across the denominational board. And so I want us to acknowledge what's really happening with some of that decline, and then to figure out, well, how do we help people to understand that the work we're doing, the spiritual life is worth living, how to find meaning in being in community, which is more of a societal issue than just a church issue. You know, we're not joining things anymore across the board. So
the whole bowling alone.
The bowling alone, exactly. Robert Putnam had, you know, he had something there. So, but I think, and this is a faith tenet, but I also just think that we're not meant to be alone. We're meant to be in relationship with one another and to be in community in some way. And if for Episcopalians particularly, if we can get away from our shyness with talking about some of the things that are most important to us, like our faith community, then the numbers will take care of themselves. I'm also interested in, you know, not just what our numbers look like in the pews, which is what a lot of those surveys count, but you know, how many lives are we touching? Because if you look at that number, it's, you know, we punch above our weight in so many ways. There are so many lives that we are helping to change by the various ministries and programs that we're doing that belies the number that's sitting there Sunday by Sunday. So that second number, how many lives are we touching? I want those numbers, and I want those to always be going up.
Is that hard to quantify, though? I mean, you don't always know the impact of a life touched.
No, and by that, I'm not necessarily meaning, you know, is someone having a transformational moment, but are we feeding the hungry in our communities? And we're doing that. You know, are we providing services that a community would not otherwise have? You know, I mean, those are significant contributions that we make to all kinds of communities, and we don't tend to count those in the church. We do a parochial report. You know, we count who's on church on Easter and Sunday by Sunday. And those are important, as I said. But I would also like to be able to quantify in real numbers how many people came to your food pantry this week, how many folks were at your, you know, who came to overnight at your shelter, that kind of thing.
So the standard, and I realize I'm oversimplifying this to some degree, is less about how many people you have sitting in the pews and more about what are we doing to serve the greater good.
Correct. I mean, you know, they have to both be held together. To only do one or the other doesn't tell the truth either. So it's both.
We are talking with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs, who will be ordained this Saturday as the Bishop of the Diocese of Indianapolis, which covers 48 congregations in the lower two-thirds of Indiana. So basically, by my math, that's probably from Lafayette pretty much down to the Ohio River.
Yeah.
She is the first African-American female bishop to be ordained in North America and only the third in the entire global Anglican community. She's also the first bishop to succeed a female bishop. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs, who's going to be ordained this weekend by the Episcopal Church as the Bishop of the Diocese of Indianapolis, which covers 48 congregations in the lower two-thirds of Indiana. I have been reporting that she is the first African-American female bishop to be ordained in North America. That's not precisely true, right? That you are, in fact, the first to lead a diocese.
That's right.
That there have been others who have been ordained. But are you only the third still in the entire global Anglican community to lead a diocese?
Well, I'm the first black woman to lead a diocese. I think there's a woman in Zimbabwe, someplace in Africa, I heard. I forget which diocese there, that there may be another woman. But in terms of the Episcopal Church of America, I'm the first to lead. First black woman to lead a diocese, but I'm the third to be ordained. The other two, Barbara Harris was the first black woman, well, the first woman to be ordained bishop, period.
Okay.
And she's African-American. And then the second woman is Gail Harris, who succeeded her as an assisting bishop in the Diocese of Massachusetts.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can reach out to us via social media. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do what a listener named Chuck has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you.
Certainly. First What's all, on your mind?
Well, I just want to congratulate Jennifer on her election as bishop. It's great to see our churches becoming more diverse, particularly in its leadership. And I'm an ELCA pastor, which we work very closely with the Episcopal Church. And I assume this Saturday our bishop will be there at your ordination.
He will.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
I assumed as much. And my question really has to do more with, you mentioned earlier about some of the metrics we use to measure effectiveness. People in the pew versus, you know, how many lives are we changing, and yeah, that's very hard to measure, but we are struggling as a church, and I'm not sure that's necessarily all bad, but I think what it does is it forces us to really think clearly and profoundly and deeply about who we are and what we are to be about. And so I'd like to hear you just reflect on that question, who are we and what are we to be about? What are we meant to be as the church that will make a difference in this world? I think to the first century church that they were very unique and they were persecuted. They were at the same time marginalized, and yet they became communities for people to find an identity. All right, I've said enough, so I'll let you go answer that question.
Thanks very much for the call and the question.
Thank you for all of that, Chuck. So, you know, there's a part of me, I mean, when someone asks me about, you know, how do I feel about stepping into the space, mm-hmm. part of the learning curve for me is coming to terms with things that I've said often and now need to figure out how they square with being a leader of the institution in this way. Because there is decline, and there are faithful people in small towns across the country, even right here in Indiana, and other places I've lived, and we've become accustomed to doing church in a particular way that has lots of infrastructure and overhead in addition to, you know, the various things that we need to prop up or to have carry on as part of having a congregation. And so there's a tension there because it's harder to do church. It's more expensive to do church now than it was. And there's a part of me that says, you know, we just need to be lean. Part of we need to figure out how to get down to the essentials so that we are able to be spending as much time as possible doing the life-changing ministry than making sure that we're taking care of the buildings, for instance. So this is, takes the historic preservationist in me, and I got to wrestle with some things. And so at the heart, I'm really interested in having congregations that are about those core things, loving God, loving neighbor, serving all, and getting the other stuff out of the way. And so, and having beautiful worship spaces is important. Taking care of our buildings and our history is important. And trying to figure out how to do that in ways that are sustainable. That's the task. But at the end of the day, the most essential thing has to get done, which is that love of God, love of neighbor, and trying to change the world in some way. So I don't have any answers to that are neat and pat. It's something I think we all are struggling with as the institutional church, to say that we love the way we live out our tradition right now, and we know that not all of it is sustainable the way it currently exists, and we got to figure that out.
We've gotten a question from a listener named Tab via Facebook. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Tab writes, I'd like to know why religion in general doesn't have a larger voice when it comes to environmental issues. Whether you believe in creationism or evolution seems like a cause that religion should be more involved in.
Well, I would say, it's funny, and maybe it's because of my own interests around sustainable agriculture and the environment, that I spend a lot of my time with people of faith who are all about the environment and creation care. I think it's a Green Faith, which is an initiative that started out of New Jersey but has a national presence that is all about trying to connect people of faith to caring for the creation, because it's a core value. I mean, this is mm-hmm. one of those things that goes back to Genesis and, you know, interpreting the care of creation not in a way that's about subjugating it, but it's about actually making sure that there's some creation to care for generations to come, and to taking that as not as an extra thing that we do because it's, you know, it's a nice idea, but that it's our duty to actually care for the environment and to know, and to help ensure that there's some sort of a future for generations to come. So I think there is a segment that's really concerned about those issues. Mm-hmm. I think it's hard sometimes to get that out there in the midst mm-hmm. of all the other things that, you know, folks might want to talk about related to the church. You know, it's not the flashy attention getting work, but it's being done all over the place.
Do we as a culture here think of religion as too monolithic? You know, because I think the public perception out there is that if you're talking about a faith community, you're talking really about the religious right.
Right.
And the reality is that there are almost as different, many different ways to worship as there are human beings. So
that's right. You know, it's I think a lot of it has to do with how do we get airtime. So I'm glad to be on the air today to have a different kind of perspective out there because it isn't a monolithic. You know, the religion is, as you say, has always been this diverse. And but sometimes it's kind of hard to be seen. An Episcopal church, and you know, is small by numbers, and so sometimes it's harder to get some of the information out about what we're doing or what other groups are doing. But you know, folks are trying, as I say, trying to make a difference in the world in all kinds of ways, and they believe different. They have different ways of believing how that should be done. They have different ways of worshiping. And it's it would be wonderful if we were able to lead with that kind of diversity instead of just painting a broad brush and saying, well, religion just means one thing. It's really hard to kind of pin it down. But it's if you're thinking about how much seconds do you have to convey an idea, you know, it's really hard to talk about that diversity in a way that's really pithy.
Yeah, do it in 140 characters
right.
or less,
yeah.
as it were. We're talking with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs here on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Ann has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ann, welcome to the program. Ann, are you with us? We'll see if we can get her back at another point. So I wanted to ask, picking up on this question of diversity, and we talked a little bit about this at the break. You know, this is a milestone of sorts, your ordination. We talked about that at the top of the program. But I've always been haunted by a quote from the late Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who said that the most segregated hour of American life is at 11 a.m. on Sunday. That we have different, just have different ways of worshiping. I wanted to ask, is that still true in your view? Have we made progress? And even if we have, is there more progress we need to make?
Yeah, I would say we've made progress, and there's a long way to go. And the part of the problem, I think, of trying to figure out how to do that, though, is that we are actually, as a culture, I think, kind of resegregating in some ways. I sort of follow the news and I think about how public education is becoming kind of resegregated, right? And I think, you know, the real estate is only part of the story about where people live. Worship styles has something to do with it. But I would say, as I travel around the diocese of Indianapolis, there's way more diversity than I would have thought. I mean, I'm learning Indiana, and I'm thinking I go to congregations, and even the ones that are not in big cities, and I'm finding people of different cultures, different races. And I'd say, as I look at some of our congregations in lots of religious communities vis-a-vis their communities and who's outside the doors of the sanctuary, it's clear that there's some more reaching out to be done so that we might more truly reflect our communities.
We are talking with Bishop-elect Jennifer Baskerville Burroughs here on No Limits. Anne, I think we have you back on the line.
I hope so.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to share that I was part of an ecumenical delegation to the General Convention in the 70s when the ordination of women was approved by the Episcopal Church. And it was exciting to be a part of that event. I think I held a sign that was said something like ordain women or stop baptizing them.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to share that moment of history and let the Bishop-elect know how proud we all are of her and how much we welcome her to Indianapolis.
Well, thank you very much for the call and for sharing that memory.
Thank you, Anne. That's wonderful.
We've also gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Jean, similar sentiment. Jean writes, I belong to another denomination, but I am a closet Episcopalian. I regularly watch the online services of the Washington National Cathedral. I understand and appreciate the emphasis the Episcopal Church on music, scripture, and mission. Congratulations and blessings on Ms. Baskerville as she assumes her new duties. I mean, it must be gratifying to get a lot of people. In the course of this program, we've had several people write or call in and say, you know, welcome to the city, wishing you well, asking what can be done to help you?
Yeah, you know, it is one of, this is probably, as I was coming out of the car to the station, John, mm-hmm. I was thinking, oh my gosh, there, it's kind of a half, this is your life moment, as people to mm-hmm. remind me of memories that we've shared over the last couple of decades doing various things around the church, and then well-wishers who I haven't met yet, and it's beautiful, and I'm so grateful for all of it. I mean, truly, it's a big thing to step into this work and to feel supported and welcome, not just by the Episcopal community, but by others. It really rejoices my heart.
So what surprised you most about Indianapolis and Indiana?
Ooh, that surprised me.
Had you
me
been
most.
Here before?
I had.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been here maybe 3 or 4 times before, all by the church bringing mm-hmm. me here for one reason or another. And, you know, and I've lived on the East Coast and the West Coast and then in Chicago. So I had always heard the, oh, you know, Naptown, Indianapolis doesn't have a lot going on. And
yeah, turn your watch back 25 years.
Yeah, and I'm like, have they been here
years?
Lately?
Yeah,
this
yeah.
place is awesome. You know, there's great food. And that's a bit, I mean, that was a big concern for me. I'm, you know, a foodie. And uh-huh. I was delighted to find, as I was preparing to move here, my family and I, that Indianapolis was listed as one of the 15 food cities to watch and that there were all these great restaurants. And truth be told, in Chicago, a lot of our food comes from Indiana. So, so that was a delight. There's great culture here and art and a committed community that's really trying to do some things that are it's wonderful to see. It's pretty cohesive in that desire to change for the better.
So obviously we're going to have you come back at some point because the parts of your life, the whole food thing you just alluded to, you wrote a food blog
yeah.
for a while and were a contributor to a magazine in regard to that. And also we haven't talked about the whole triathlon thing
that
you do too. So that all by itself could be another hour. But we do welcome you to the city and appreciate the fact that you came here and spent this time with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a joy.
I'd like to thank our listeners for some great questions. Sorry we couldn't get to them all. Maybe next Tuesday when we're back on the air, we'll be able to. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.